From Sandringham to South Yarra, you're listening to Southern FM.
The Hubble Space Telescope is 30 years old. The Space Show is marking the birthday with a series of programs. Welcome to Program 4.
Sometimes your on-sight is limited, and some distant things seem to be invisible. But when there opens up a window to this world of unseen things, you can see the endless beauty beyond Earth that surrounds all of us in every single second of our life. Some observe it, some explore it, and some even find inspiration from it. In space, we are not alone.
When planning this series of programs, the intention had been to use this program to explore the cultural impact of the Hubble Space Telescope. Then the final program to look ahead to the next generation of space telescopes. These include the James Webb Space Telescope and the Wide Field Infrared Survey Telescope, otherwise known as WFIRST. But then, last Thursday, NASA Administrator Thomas Urbaken put the spanner in our space show plans.
Absolutely. I'm so excited that we're renaming the WFIRST mission. We knew all along that we wanted to name it, in a way we had before, after a person who's really important for astronomy, very influential for NASA. And I think we found just the right person again. And frankly, the person we want to rename this after is a person who had huge influence in all of astronomy and space. It's a person who imagined the influence of space astronomy before others even thought that that's possible. It's a person who imagined the Hubble Space Telescope before it had a name, before it was even a concept, and was there all along from the idea to making that telescope a reality. When faced with challenges, this person persevered, pushed beyond through these challenges, and became a leader of the entire astrophysics community. In a time when women were actively discouraged from careers of science and astronomy and mathematics and so forth, she became an astronomer. And she became the highest ranking woman in NASA during a time where there were very few that made it up the ladder. She continued to be an advocate for Hubble even after her retirement. And that's why today I'm so excited that we can rename this telescope for it to become the Nancy Grace Roman Space Telescope. Dr. Roman really deserves to be permanently associated with this amazing mission that she really helped enable in a direct fashion. And I'm so delighted to have that name there as a lasting legacy to this amazing person that I have learned so much about. And especially what that means to me is that really Nancy Grace Roman deserves a place in the heavens she studied and opened for so many. So you should know, if you're in a job like mine, there's a lot of people with a lot of ideas that come to you. And that does not surprise you. And one of the things I noticed really quickly is that whenever we talked about WFIRST, there was one name that always popped up, and it is Nancy Grace Roman. Of course, I started to learn about this, and I actually did work. I actually, learned about her passing away, learned the great articles that were written by so many, and I learned about her legacy, including the first Space Telescope Series, the Orbital Astronomical Observatories and Orbital Solar Observatories in the 60s and 70s. And kind of the more I heard and learned about this, the more excited I got about naming it to that. And ultimately, of course, this is a decision of the administrator, who was just as enthusiastic once we talked about the options here.
While many people consider the James Webb Space Telescope to be the successor to the Hubble Space Telescope, it is more appropriate to see the Webb as the daughter of the Spitzer Space Telescope. Before launch, Spitzer was known as SIRTS, the Space Infrared Telescope Facility. Unlike Hubble, which observed primarily in the visible range of wavelengths, Spitzer observed the universe within the infrared light range. The new Webb telescope, which is being tested in California, will observe the infrared universe, particularly highly redshifted galaxies in the early universe.
So one of the wonderful challenges about astronomy is that we have to imagine something so we can go look for it. But nature has this way of being even more creative than we are. So we have always been surprised by what we see in the sky. That's why building a telescope has always been interesting. Every time we build a better one, we see something we never imagined was out there. That's been going on for centuries. This is the next step in that great series of a bigger, better, more powerful telescope that will surely surprise us in some way that I can't tell you.
So the James Webb Space Telescope at its core is designed to answer some of the biggest questions we have in astronomy today. And these are questions that go beyond just being science questions. They're questions that really get to the heart of who we are as human beings. Questions like, where do we come from? And how do we get here? And of course the big one, are we alone? To answer the biggest questions in astronomy today, we really need a very big telescope. And the James Webb Space Telescope is the biggest telescope we've ever attempted to send into space. It really sets us up with some really big engineering challenges.
It had never been done before to build a big unfolding telescope in space, because we knew we needed something that was bigger than the rocket to achieve the scientific discoveries that we wanted to make. We had to invent a new way to make the mirrors, a way to focus it in outer space, several new kinds of infrared detectors. We had to invent the big unfolding umbrella. We call it a sun shield.
Webb has four broad science goals: to detect the very first stars and galaxies that were born in the very early universe. So this is a part of the universe that we haven't seen at all yet. We don't know what's there. So the telescope, in a sense, is going to open up this brand new part of the universe, the part of the universe that got everything started.
To search for the first galaxies that were born after the Big Bang?
The first stars and galaxies are really the big mystery for us. We don't know how that happened, we don't know when it happened, we don't know what those first stars were like. Now, we have a pretty good idea that they were very much larger than the Sun, and that they would burn out in a tremendous burst of glory in just a few million years.
To watch how galaxies grow and change over time?
We have questions like how galaxies merge, how their black holes form, and how gas inflows and outflows affect galaxy evolution. But we're really missing a key piece of the puzzle, which is how galaxies got their start.
To find stars and planets born inside dusty clouds, and to help in our search for life in the universe.
So astronomy is one of the most observationally based sciences we've ever had. Everything we know about the sky has been a surprise. The ancients knew about the stars, but they didn't know they were far away. They didn't know that they were like the sun. Eventually we found that our own galaxy is one of hundreds, billions of galaxies, and that the universe is actually very old, but not infinitely old, so that was a big surprise too. Einstein thought, of course, the universe must have an infinite age without a starting point. Well, he was wrong. So our intuition has just been wrong almost all the time. We're pretty confident that we don't know what we're going to find.
As an astronomer, one of the most exciting things about working on a telescope like this is the prospect of what it will tell us that we haven't even thought of yet. We have all these really detailed science questions that we'll ask, that we know to ask, and that we'll answer. And in a sense, that's what science is all about. You know, in answering the questions, we come up with more questions. So there's this almost infinite supply of questions, of things that we have to learn. So that's why NASA builds telescopes, is really to get to this fundamental part of who we are as human beings. you know, we're explorers and we want to learn about what our universe is like.
Those comments by astronomers were collected by the Goddard Space Flight Center. Now to W first. WFIRST for Wide Field Infrared Survey Telescope. Now it's a wide field instrument, which means that it can see quite a range in angular angle, much more than the Hubble Space Telescope can. And it sees in the range from 480 to 2,000 nanometers. Now, that's right through the visible range, like the Hubble does, and way into the infrared. It also has a coronagraph, which is sensitive to 500 to 800 nanometers. Now, remember that visible light is 400 to 700 nanometers. So the coronagraph is also visible, sensitive to visible light. And we have this little feature about the coronagraph.
A coronagraph is a way to see distant planets hidden by the glare of the star they orbit. The coronagraph reduces the light coming directly from the star to separate it from the light reflected by the planet. WFIRST doesn't block the star's light with an opaque disk as a simple coronagraph might. Instead, it uses a combination of disks with complex patterns and light-blocking stops to create destructive interference with the star's light, effectively making it disappear, while allowing the light from planets to pass through. A complicating factor is that the light picks up small distortions as it reflects off the telescope's series of mirrors, and these distortions can reduce the effectiveness of the destructive interference. Collecting more light increases the image signal, but the planets are still hidden under blobs of leftover, distorted starlight. To remove these blobs, the coronagraph has special deformable mirrors that can change shape by using hundreds of tiny pistons. This corrects the distortions in the light beam. As the mirrors deform, the blobs of light slowly begin to disappear, revealing brighter planets. Further adjustment brings fainter planets into view. Advanced software processes this data, further improving the contrast and clarity of the image. This processing makes objects more than a billion times fainter than the star visible. As a result, WFIRST will provide the first look at individual planets in star systems that might be similar to our own.
So WFIRST has been renamed as the Roman Space Telescope. Here's an overview of what that telescope should be doing.
The universe. For all we have learned about it, we have only just begun to reveal its secrets. What are dark matter and dark energy? How common are planetary arrangements like our own? And how many planets in our galaxy have the potential to harbor life? The Nancy Grace Roman Space Telescope will help answer these fundamental questions. Formerly known as WFIRST, the Roman Space Telescope is similar to Hubble, but with the benefit of 30 years of technological improvement. Each image from its wide-field instrument will have the depth and clarity of Hubble's best, but capture a sky area 100 times larger. The Roman Space Telescope will take the lead in exploring dark energy and dark matter. We only know they exist by their effects on observable matter, yet these two mysterious components make up 95% of the universe. The Roman Space Telescope's powerful 2.4-meter mirror and enormous field of view will also help us in the search for planets beyond our solar system, or exoplanets. It will watch for gravitational microlensing events, caused when a planet and its host star pass in front of a background star. Such events are rare, so catching them requires watching large swaths of the sky. To deepen its study of exoplanets, the Roman Space Telescope will house a beyond state-of-the-art coronagraph that will directly image and analyze Neptune-sized planets in orbits slightly larger than Earth's, a dramatic improvement over current capabilities. The Nancy Grace Roman Space Telescope will help us answer many of the biggest cosmic questions. Its wide-field view and coronagraph will complement missions like NASA's James Webb Space Telescope and Transiting Exoplanet Survey Satellite, TESS. The Roman Space Telescope will be an indispensable part of space science during the next decade and beyond.
Now, Nancy Roman was born in 1925, and she died in December of 2018 at the age of 93. A year and a half before she died, Mary Astashian of the Space Telescope Institute did an interview with Nancy, and unfortunately, the questions were not recorded. So we're going to read the questions in the studio here, and the answers will be those of Nancy herself. Now, Nancy, what is your name, and what was your role on Hubble?
My name is Nancy Grace Roman, and my role in Hubble was as program scientist, and that means that I basically tried to sell the program. Did other things too, but my major effort was trying to convince people that it was very well worth doing.
And why are you called the mother of Hubble?
Well, I think the reason Lyman Spitzer, an astronomer at Princeton, had been pushing a telescope above the atmosphere for a long time, and he did a lot to convince a number of people that that should be done. And so he was known as the father of the Hubble. And I think that Ed Wyler, who happened at that time to be the director he was assistant director of NASA, I think, at the time. He was the director of Goddard for a while before that. Said, if he was going to be the father of the telescope, she should be the mother of the Hubble. And that's what he was the one who called me the mother of the Hubble. When the Hubble was first launched. Now, why? You'll have to ask him as to exactly why.
And what do you think is Hubble's most important finding so far? And the most surprising finding so far?
Dark energy is the most important discovery, and certainly the most... I think it was also the most surprising, very surprising.
Well, we're going to have more from Nancy on next week's The Space Show.